Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take. Today is March 22nd, 2026. I'm your host, Blois Olson. It is the heart of the legislative session. The first deadline is coming. The big issues continue to kind of pile up a little. It's also convention season where those running for statewide office are jockeying for delegates, and those who are running for the legislature are hoping for endorsements. Two key conventions this week, one yesterday on Saturday. Braxton Seifert won a three-way endorsement battle out in Senate District 15 to replace Gary Dames. That was one thing to watch out there. And then we had a little surprise. Representative Chris Swidzinski, who's been a veteran of the legislature, a leader on energy issues, gave his convention speech and then said, "I'm not running." So we have another open seat and another loss of institutional knowledge that will put us over 480 or 90 years of legislative experience that will be lost either due to retirements or candidates running for other offices. This past week, moderated a panel at the Minnesota Rural Electric Association with legislative leaders, Lisa Damath, Jamie Long, Nick Frentz, and Mark Johnson. And it is clear that there's some jockeying to see what could possibly get done this session, but all eyes are on November. And that will be the topic of the take this week. We're going to talk about transportation this week. And I have two guests who are steeped in transportation policy. They're leading the way at the legislature. One is co-chair John Koznick, Republican from Lakeville in the House. The other is Senator Scott Dibble in the Senate. Waymo, autonomous vehicles, transit consolidation, repealing tab fees. And then, just in general, do we have the best transportation strategy for the state of Minnesota? As I've traveled the country, I've started to wonder. You think about autonomous vehicles, you think of the investments in rail, you think about the changing habits of commuters. How far ahead can we think about consumer behavior, Minnesota behavior, and transportation? I'll ask that to my guest this week on Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. We are back on the Sunday Take. My guest is Representative John Koznick. And before we dig into transportation, I know we'll both be watching a basketball game later today. Rock Chalk, Representative Koznick.
That's right.
Full disclosure, we both have daughters who go to the University of Kansas. And so that's our favorite to win the tourney. Representative Koznick, you're 5 weeks into session, first deadline coming up. What's the state of play on transportation issues when in the tied Minnesota House?
Well, I think we're chugging along. I would preface it to say into our second year of a tied House of Representatives that it is a lot more difficult than people on the outside may appreciate. But we're making progress and hearing bills and trying to keep the partisanship and rancor down. But when you have to share agendas and have sometimes opposing outsets and political ideals, it makes it a little challenging. But I think the topic that we want to talk about, automated vehicles, is something that we've found to have some shared interest. How we get there will remain to be seen, but I'm optimistic.
Yeah, obviously autonomous vehicles is a hot topic. The brand name being Waymo that is trying to come into this market. You found some common ground there. What's the common ground on autonomous vehicles and what other issues is there common ground on in the House?
Well, in terms of this policy for automated vehicles, I think we understand on both sides of the aisle that the current statutes and laws regarding that are a little behind technology, behind the times, and we recognize, have a shared understanding that putting some guide rails and understanding and parameters in that regard will help put some clarity for both for industry and also as we move forward in terms of safety and how we have companies operate in Minnesota. So we understand that we do need some guide rails. I think we have a broad idea of how much regulation or minimal regulation we need.
Waymo and autonomous vehicles are present in other states. I travel to Arizona a fair amount. They're everywhere there. Are there things that we can learn from those other states that have worked, or did those states not regulate them, and does that cause issues?
I think there are, there are a lot of things that we can learn from other states that have already, and other cities that have already gone commercial application point of this, not just studying it or mapping out cities. For instance, Texas passed their regulation and quickly realized that they were missing a few things in terms of being able to have the Department of Texas Transportation or the state be able to pause operation if something goes wrong operationally within a fleet. And that's something that we've learned and we didn't actually have in our first iteration in the House bill, but we've done a delete all amendment to incorporate that. That was kind of, we knew it was on there. We just didn't have it as explicit as the department wanted. So I think that's a good thing that we've already done, but there are a number of other things that we can learn from other states. And also, because it's been in practice for many, many years, we can have a higher level of certainty on safety and operation and that. And while it's new to Minnesota and many Minnesotans, looking in the industry, it's not like it's a brand new emerging thing that just came, 6 months ago. It's been going on for decades and even in practice in Minnesota in a couple different test pilots.
Last question on autonomous vehicles. What are the where do you think does this have to get done? Does there have to be some policy passed this session, or is there a possibility that this doesn't get resolved this session?
There is always a possibility that something doesn't get reached or compromised with on this session in transportation or in all, across all committee areas. We passed a budget last year in the budget cycle, and this year is more of a policy year, and there isn't a legal requirement or constitutional requirement to pass any bills. But I think it's something that is emerging, and as transportation leaders in the House and the Senate, we would like to provide some parameters for those that are willing to come to Minnesota and invest this technology and provide this service. It would be good for Minnesotans to have that us provide some of those guide rails and regulations so that they know the regulatory clarity is what I think industry is looking for before they make additional investments. But it's right around the corner. Certainly, again, optimistic that we can try to find agreements. And then, if not, certainly we will be front and center and work off the work that was done this year if we need to do it in a future year.
My guest is Representative John Koznick. He's the House co-chair on transportation. Representative Koznick, one of the other ideas you've proposed and is getting a healthy debate, and it's got bipartisan support, is this idea of consolidating some of the suburban bus lines into Metro Transit. You've said there's going to be some cost savings here. Are you talk about that vision, why you want to pursue that, and if you're concerned about kind of the quality of those routes or those routes getting lost if they're part of Metro Transit.
Well, this isn't a brand new idea. It's something that maybe hasn't been discussed in the last session or two. A predecessor of mine, Alice Hausman, representative in the St. Paul area, I believe, if I remember right. This is something that she had been looking at. But more broadly, we have five different bus service providers in the metro region. About 40 years ago, the way we funded transit services in these suburbs was a lot different, and four different communities wanted a little bit more control of the dollars that they were contributing from their property taxes. We no longer fund transit systems in by property taxes anymore. And if you think of the suburb that you live in, or even the city that anybody lives in, it has evolved incredibly in the last 40 years. And so that model isn't necessary for function anymore. And I think a broader regional approach to how we get people, especially in the suburbs, to where they need to go. Looking at that, there's a big opportunity here to provide better service, but also we found that there was an incredible amount of egregious waste. Some rides were as much as $200 a ride one way, boys. So that's $400. That's worse than the North Star commuter rail. And then the transit needs in these communities have changed, like I mentioned, just because of population growths and stuff. And so the types of rides that people need and use are a lot different than 20 years ago.
When you say it was $200 a ride each way, that's the subsidy just based on people not being on the bus, but the bus being subsidized. Is that right?
Yeah, there was, because there was money pumping into these extra providers, they were just using it up and testing things out and using it until the money ran out. But yes, setting up new bus routes that nobody rode ever, and then continuing to operate it for years was extremely wasteful. That particular route is no longer running, but it's indicative of a lot of these high subsidy routes that there was a report that we requested, and the average subsidy was $85 a ride, which is near the over $100 ride that North Star was on. So it's very, very comparable. So that's like $160, $170 a ride. We just can't afford it, and nor should taxpayers be required to subsidize to that extent.
When you look at that, issues like that and efficiencies, you've been critical of Metro Transit, the operations, the safety. What are the things that you hope would improve overall the efficiency and the cost effectiveness at Metro Transit, even if you can't get it done this session, but what would be your focus?
Well, I think we're recognizing how even post-COVID, those ridership patterns pre-COVID are not coming back. The way people commute, telecommute, that they prefer to stay a little bit more in their communities than they used to, rather than coming into into town every day, into the core cities. And so I hope that what we're trying to do is be more efficient with the taxpayer dollars that we have in transit and allow Metro Transit, or however we structure this in the future, allow them to meet the needs of the whole region, which is a little bit more bus rapid transit type, arterial, faster buses rather than regular route service in a lot of the outlying areas. And then also on-demand kind of micro transit, short rides, to or from transit stations, which I think can augment. And back to the autonomous vehicles, automated vehicles can play a key role in helping augment the overall transit system and needs. And so they're loosely tied together and very important to transform our transit system in the future to be more efficient with taxpayer dollars, but also more efficient in terms of ridership and getting people to where they want to go.
As you think about, we've had the infrastructure bill, we've had a ton of federal money into our transportation system the last couple of years. If you drive at all in the Twin Cities, you see these projects. I happen to drive 394 every day, so let me just tell you that they're actually doing a pretty good job overall, I will say, despite my previous critiques of the way they manage it. But look ahead, we're going to have a new governor, next year. Southwest Light Rail has obviously been a huge frustration. Metro Transit has not operated that well since the pandemic. The resources at the state level are slimmer. We can't necessarily count on federal resources anymore. Where should the next governor, no matter what party, what is the vision of the future of the transportation system, and how do you balance the metro area with Greater Minnesota's transportation needs?
Well, I think anybody in the transportation realm needs to, we're getting there, but you need to understand the different ways that people want to use transit as opposed to the old school regular route type service that goes into the core cities and then back out. And so you need to recognize that first, and then that people want maybe more weekend type routes into town, special kind of events, concerts, athletic events, and provide routes that way to the airports rather than for day-to-day commuting. And we still have a strong need for that, don't get me wrong. You know, people love the express buses that get for those that actually still do come into the core cities and in the work zones, whether it's in the core cities or maybe in some suburb, a big industrial area, workforce needs, office needs. And then also, like I said, the on-demand type service are the two most popular uses of transit right now, from a recent study here.
Representative Kozenek, thanks for joining me on the Sunday Take. I know we'll talk about transit down the way, and go Jayhawks.
Rock chalk, baby.
When we come back, Senator Scott Dibble on where Senate Democrats are on transportation this session. I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to Sunday Take. I'm your host, Blois Olson. Transportation is the topic this week, and my second guest is Senator Scott Dibble. He's been a leader on transportation in the Minnesota Senate for quite some time. And as we think about policy, one of the themes you're going to hear from me throughout the year is just you have to have knowledge if you're going to have good policy. And that's not to say new members of the legislature can't have knowledge, but they have to build more of it. And I just want to kick off, Senator Dibble, by there's a lot of retirements. I think we're at over 400 some years of institutional knowledge lost on various issues. Now, there's a couple of veteran legislators who make up the majority of that, but there's a lot of retirements this year. As somebody who's been there, what would be your advice of to legislative candidates on how to get up to speed on policy as they're also running for office?
Well, that's a fantastic question, and it is really important because governing is very, very important kind of foundational principle. It's a we've got a state that has been run very, very well, and a lot of that is attributable to a highly functional legislature. That didn't happen by magic. It happened by some key institutional changes that were made. Like 2 generations ago, to make sure that our legislature is professionalized and has excellent research functions and policy analysis, et cetera. We have, this great legislative auditor, but it takes legislators who really have a heart for digging into the issues and making those kinds of decisions and investments that are in the public's interest. Specifically to transportation, there's nothing like just talking to veteran legislators, talking to your local chambers of commerce, and all the institutions that need transportation, and help implement your county engineers, your city engineers, those who serve seniors and young people, and what the challenges are. Transportation isn't about just, moving down the road. It's about connectivity and shared prosperity and investment in our economy. I'm not involved in transportation because, I'm some sort of a infrastructure nerd or a car nerd, a train nerd or a boat nerd or a port nerd. To me, it's all about what transportation translates into. We have, I'm going to nerd out here for a second. We have the fourth largest roadway system in the country. It's not per capita, not by, relative to the size of our state, literally the fourth largest roadway system by center lane mile, only behind California, Illinois, and Texas. So that represents a tremendous amount of investment in the economy, the infrastructure that has made part of what has made Minnesota a standout state in the upper Midwest, and a leader in terms of its economic performance and efficiency and shared prosperity in the nation. That represents, a huge effort on the part of the generations that passed before us. It's a real hallmark. Most of those lane miles are owned by local units of government. So that's really important to know as a legislator, because we really get focused on the state highway system, the interstates, the US highway system, and the trunk highway system. But we need to pay very close attention to the local roads, the county roads, the township roads, the city roads, cities of large and small size, because those are supported mostly by property taxes. But we do have an important shared state-local relationship. We're starting to do better in that realm. But the bill is coming due. It's an aging system, and we had the pothole bonanza of a couple winters ago that really showed that it's an aging system that needs a lot of support and effort to maintain. And then if there's a whole discussion around making sure we're building communities that work well for everyone in all stages and walks of life, so that we have connectivity to jobs and school and all the things that people need, by transit, by walking, and of course, our road and bridge system is very important too.
As you think about that, one of the things that, we're in the session, there's a lot of hot topics that we'll get to in a minute, but I wanted to just lean into the idea that we're going to have a new governor next year. What should the next governor think about where transportation in Minnesota should go, knowing that consumer and ridership habits have changed a lot in the last 6 years from the pandemic, the way in which commuters commute? We've got a wave of infrastructure funding from the feds that we may not be able to count on in the future. Where do you think the focus needs to be when you think of the future of transportation?
Well, first and foremost, how efficiently we spend our dollars. I mean, there was, a fairly robust, a very robust bill that we passed in 2023 that represents, an influx of investment to try to start to catch up on the maintenance and the upkeep of that roadway system, which is, very, very challenging to keep up with that, and that's important, and we of course need to do what we call, expansions, if you will, where there are key bottlenecks, and where there are safety issues and the like. But doing a lot of new lane miles, probably not a very prudent way to use our dollars. Using our dollars to what we call fix it first, would be the best way to go, recognizing that where companies want to locate, where young people who are starting careers and businesses and families and buying houses, they want to live in places with, that deliver a high quality of life. And sometimes that translates to, a whole bunch of quality of life amenities that are, and that includes in their mind, transportation options, get places by foot and by bicycle and by transit. And it creates a, there's a certain level of vibrancy that they're looking for that's delivered through that kind of the land use nexus that is created with fitting land use and transportation together. So yeah, I mean, we hear a lot about, oh, these people are leaving the state for this reason and that reason. The fact is, the demographer tells us that the challenge we have is hanging on to younger people, young professionals, people emerging into the job market, and employers are, really crying out for, what do we need, what kind of housing forms do we need, and what kind of transportation, what kind of land use, what kind of quality of life amenities do we need to keep those young people here.
One of the things that is a topic this year at the session is autonomous vehicles. People see them as Waymo, but there's going to be plenty of other brands and ways in which autonomous vehicles are used. Where is that on the importance of finding some policy for autonomous vehicles in this session?
Well, I can't quite peg how important we need to completely wrap up with a pretty bow all of the policy demands that this question is, places upon us. We have started a really, really good conversation in the Senate. I can't quite keep track of what's going on in the House. It seems a little confused over there, but we had a great hearing last week. I rolled out a bill that hits on a fairly comprehensive set of issues around, driverless robo taxis, autonomous vehicles, whatever you
Yep.
want to call them. Several, other of my colleagues had, slightly different takes on that, and we're going to try to, compare notes and try to get the best package pulled together this coming week. The implied pressure is that Waymo is going to do what Lyft and Uber did and just show up and start operating. I don't actually think that is legally possible. Some say it is, but my legal analysis shows that it is not.
Okay.
And furthermore, in the absence of any movement, the cities can enact a regulatory parameters and guidelines and guardrails for how they operate if need be. I think it is very important to have start the conversation, maybe try to get to some firm conclusions by this time next year. I mean, I don't know that this is inevitable. I don't see people clamoring for robo taxis necessarily. Some communities and some specific cohorts are, but overall, I think there people really want us to be very intentional and very deliberate. Public safety, and making sure these vehicles are safe is number one. Making sure that
Yep.
emergency responders can respond, who's liable in the event of a mishap, and then what are the implications for clogging up our roads, and what if they fail to function correctly? What are the implications for transit and walkability and livability? What are the implications for the existing workforce? We can't just dismiss that. I mean, no, I know that disruptive technologies come in and displace a whole bunch of workers, but we can't just wash our hands and absolve ourselves of some responsibility for that. What are the implications for the infrastructure? And our city's going to have to change curbs and put up a lot of signs or lights, et cetera. Just a lot of really, really important questions that we need to ask and answer. Who's going to certify? Who's going to regulate? Who's going to give the permission? Should we leave some of that authority in the hands of local units of government or not? We need to work through those questions. I don't know that we're going to get through them all in the few weeks that we have. So maybe we postpone the effective date of green lighting robo taxis at some point in the distant or not too distant future, and really work through those discussions. We have the Connected and Automated Vehicles Advisory Group or Governor's Group at the
Yep.
Department of Transportation, and they've done some excellent work. My sense, though, is that they're very much in the posture of being real champions and cheerleaders and advocates, which I don't think is quite proper. I think we really need to center the public's interest.
Last question for this topic on transportation. There's can talk about consolidating the suburban bus lines proposal into Metro Transit. What are the things that you'd like to see to either make Metro Transit more efficient or kind of move itself along to what consumers are looking for right now?
Well, that is a great and also very complicated question. So the suburban transit bus providers, bus companies, if you will, provide less than 5% of all the rides in the metropolitan area, and a very, very small subset of the of you know geographically of the metro area. They want a lot more of the regional resources than that would actually warrant. They provide a very, very expensive form of transportation, and beautiful tour buses, and I know just there's a lot that we need to look at very closely in terms of efficiency and what kind of transit is needed. They were created 50 years ago to solve a specific problem, which was they were paying into a system through property tax for service that they didn't get, so they were able to keep that money and develop their own systems. That form of how we support transit in the metro area has changed, and a lot has changed since then. So I think it's very fair to ask the questions, is that core problem still present? Is there still a role for what we call the opt-outs, or not? And if there is, what does that look like? I mean, should they be providing commuter transits, expressway transit, in and out of the central business district, given that people aren't working as much in the downtown areas or not? Should they provide, community to community, neighborhood to neighborhood, micro transit, support some of the larger employment and education, and retail hubs, provide that kind of connectivity out in the suburbs. It's just a lot of questions. So it's, we should not be afraid of having the conversation. I don't have a preformed conclusion. For sure, people feel very threatened. And of course, organizations, their prime directive is to protect themselves, and so they're very much in defense posture. We have this enterprise, we have a center of power, we have buildings and staff and fleets and stuff, and we need to protect those. That's not our job. Our job is to ask the bigger question: what do we need in the region for transportation, mobility, access, opportunity, transit, et cetera? And we can step back and have a good look and make sure we're not threatening what people have today and inhibiting and reducing their access and mobility. That would not be acceptable.
As we wrap here, is there any other policy and transportation that you think this session it's imperative that it moves through?
Well, I really would like to take a strong look at electric bikes. I think what are actually motorbikes are being sold as e-bikes, kids, and they're very dangerous. It's not legal, but so that's a question of enforcement and maybe a question of getting some better, slightly better definitions on the books and some enforcement tools into the hands of local officials. Kids are getting hurt. People, just pedestrians are getting, I mean, it's a kind of a mess. So we're going to try to grapple with that as well. There's probably a bunch of other subjects I'm forgetting about right now, but that's one that I'd like to get to in the next couple of weeks.
I will say this, good call on the e-bikes. My biggest fear, especially as it warms up, is that those e-bikes off the sidewalks are tough to see. They move fast. So good
Well,
call.
e-bikes are fine, but when
No, right, the fast ones.
but
Right. The
they turn
kids.
into basically motorcycles, motorbikes, or heads, or whatever. They're going way too fast, well above 25 miles per hour, and they're dangerous.
Sounds good. Senator Scott Dibble, thanks for joining me on the Sunday Take.
Thanks, boys.
When we come back, this week's take. We're back on the Sunday Take. This week's take is really about the future. I think it's time for us to start talking about what we need to be in the future. Minnesota's done a good job of that over the years. Where do we want to be? And I think this Waymo autonomous vehicle AI discussion that we're having is a good example of why that's important. Policy doesn't always keep up with disruption or change, but it should. And I think that when you look at the legislature this year, and as more young people run and are there, we need to think about how do we legislate on the future goals of what we want the state to be. I think that's a big question, especially as we lose a lot of institutional knowledge, and we need policymakers to be policy focused, not just activist focused. And I think that as we lean into this election and the endorsements and these new legislators, it's really important to be there on the future, not fighting the fights of the past. I'm Blaise Olson. This is Sunday Take. You can follow all of our newsletters at thedailyagenda.com. Spell it out, thedailyagenda.com. I'll be with Vanita at 6:20 Monday through Thursday. And this week, I'll be talking to the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. And I look forward to that as well. Until next time, that's the take.